Today from Bible teacher Chuck Swindoll.
How blessed many times over is the one whose transgression is forgiven. David would say, these are my transgressions that have been forgiven. I am blessed many times over because I serve and worship a God who hasn't killed me. He has forgiven me.
When we've blown it and made a bad mistake, nothing weighs more heavily than a personal sense of guilt and shame. We long to be off the hook and forgiven. Well, today on Insight for Living, Chuck Swindoll begins a special two-part series called Guilt, Grace, and Gratitude. For just a few days, we're taking a short pause in our study of Nehemiah to give God thanks. In particular, we're thanking God for His grace and forgiveness. To begin, let's follow along as Chuck reads from Psalm chapter 32.
We love our God because He has spoken to us in ways we can understand. He has not chosen angels to speak for Him. He has not dispatched a body of saints to return as His voice. He's not written His word in cloud formations or in night visions. His word comes to us in written form in the book of God. Today I'll speak on giving thanks for God's forgiveness based on this psalm, Psalm number 32. Next week, giving thanks for God's grace. How blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. When I kept silent about my sin, my body wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night, your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was drained away as with the fever heat of summer. Join with me in reading the Hebrew word that follows this. Together, Selah. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I did not hide. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Together, Selah. Therefore, let everyone who is godly pray to you in a time when you may be found. Surely in a flood of great waters, they shall not reach him. You are my hiding place. You preserve me from trouble. You surround me with songs of deliverance. Selah, I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you should go. I will counsel you with my eye upon you. Do not be as the horse or as the mule, which have no understanding, whose trappings include bit and bridle to hold them in check. Otherwise, they will not come near to you. Many are the sorrows of the wicked, but he who trusts in the Lord, loving kindness shall surround him. Be glad in the Lord and rejoice, you righteous ones, and shout for joy, all you who are upright in heart.
You're listening to Insight for Living. To dig deeper into the Bible with Chuck Swindoll, be sure to download his Searching the Scriptures studies by going to insight.org/studies. And now the message from Chuck titled, Giving Thanks for God's Forgiveness.
Of all the struggles we wrestle with, none is more relentless than sin. Just plain sin. It dogs our steps. It plays no favorites. It refuses to go away. It knows no barrier. Like a coiled rattler that strikes and bites, it leaves in us the venom of guilt and shame. It is ugly, and even though we know that to be true, we return to it, we serve it, we live with it. And that kind of guilt and shame can drive us mad. And for some, it has. Back in the mid-1980s, Albert Speer was interviewed regarding his last book. Chuck Colson writes of it in his work, Who Speaks for God? It's in the chapter titled, The Stink of Sin. Albert Speer responded in this interview to the words of David Hartman, who asked, you have said the guilt can never be forgiven or shouldn't be. Do you still feel that way? You remember Speer. It was his technological genius that kept the engines of Nazi Germany humming. It was Speer who was Hitler's personal confidant. He alone was the only one of the 24 who stood on trial at Nuremberg to admit his guilt. You still feel that way. You still feel that the guilt has never been forgiven, Speer responds. I served a sentence for 20 years. And I could say I'm a free man. My conscience has been cleared, but I can't do that. I still carry the burden of what happened to millions of people during Hitler's lifetime, and I can't get rid of it. The ABC interview was his last public statement. Speer died shortly thereafter. That true story reminds me of the statement made by a prison psychiatrist who shared his own professional frustrations. And I quote, I can cure people's madness, but I can't cure their badness. I could turn a schizophrenic bank robber into a mentally healthy bank robber. A good teacher can turn an illiterate criminal into an educated criminal. Bottom line, the stink of sin can only be erased by the forgiveness of God. Never forget that. In fact, it was evangelist Billy Graham who was told during his England crusade many years ago, as a local psychiatrist spoke to him, Mr. Graham, 70% of those in mental institutions could be released immediately if they could only find forgiveness. Release from their tormenting guilt. The sinful madness that almost drove King David to distraction became ultimately more than he could bear. It kept him awake at night. It haunted him through the day. He could never get away from his wrongdoing for many, many, many months. You remember them. You remember his acts. He took the wife of Uriah and committed adultery, knowing it was against the will of God. Weeks later, when Bathsheba came and whispered, I am pregnant, Not even that turned David's heart around. You remember, he lived a lie. He put Bathsheba's husband on the front line so he could be killed by the enemy. And then shortly after the death of Uriah, he took this woman and became her husband, drew the shades, locked the door, laid aside the stylus, wrote no psalms, did a poor job of leading as he conducted himself as a hypocrite, though he served as the highest office on the throne of God's special nation. But the guilt and shame didn't go away. One day, there was an ominous knock at his door. He knew even the knock because he had been familiar with this confidant of his over the years. In fact, David named his third child after Nathan. Quite likely, scholars tell us, Nathan was, in fact, the tutor of David's children as he schooled them. Nathan's voice, familiar voice, even the knock he had heard so many times. What could bring Nathan to my door? Nathan stood before the king, took his life in his own hands, as he told him a story. There was a rich man and a poor man. The rich man had many herds and flock of sheep. The poor man had one ewe lamb that he and his children loved. It ate at his table. It slept on his bosom. How they loved the ewe lamb. And when the rich man had a stranger come for a visit to feed him rather than taking from his own flock, he took the ewe lamb from the poor man. David never let Nathan finish the story. The man, we need to find him. He is guilty. He should die for that act. And Nathan, staring in the face of this king, in four single syllable words, said it all. You are the man. Not a word of excuse at that moment. We all would commend David for his honesty as he responds, I have sinned against the Lord. Nathan tells him the sword will never depart from your house, though the Lord has forgiven you. Consequences for those acts of unrighteousness will follow you to your grave. But be assured, you are forgiven in God's eyes. What follows is of interest to everyone. I believe for the first time in many, many months, David fell before God, reached over to his table by the bed, and began for the first time to write again. I think the first thing he wrote was the 51st Psalm. Read it sometime. You will see why I place it before the 32nd. And by the end of that psalm, he has another on his heart that he must write, and now with tears, he writes the 32nd. Of course, psalms were not originally numbered. They were songs. Understand that. Psalms are sacred hymns meant to be sung. These are inspired songs originally written not to be preached, but to be sung. These are not narratives to be analyzed. They're poems to move us emotionally, to touch us deeply. The lyrics come from the Spirit of God as David pours out his soul before his God. When we come to this psalm, we're immediately met with the name of the composer. This hymn is written by David. You see there? It's called a part of the superscription. You will notice a psalm of is in italics. The Hebrew simply says, from David, a maskil. We don't speak Hebrew, and so we don't understand the title. Maskil is probably from the verb sakal, which means to be prudent, circumspect, wise. And when used in certain contexts, I believe this one, it means to give insight. This is from David to give the reader, the singer of the psalm, insight. The ability to see into a situation. If you will allow me a little preacher's imagination, I believe David wrote the 32nd on his knees. And I think at the pauses, he wept. Selah. 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 You will see why he paused at those places as we sing our way through this psalm. Songs have stanzas, and this song has 5 stanzas. The first stanza is the blessedness of forgiveness. We'll return to it in a moment. That's in the first 2 verses. The blessedness of forgiveness. The second stanza provides us with the agony of guilt and shame. Selah. By this time, verses 3 and 4 covering this second stanza, David begins to weep tears of remembrance. He recalls. He remembers. And we'll see what he remembered as we go through the song. The third stanza is the relief of confession. That's a single verse, verse 5, Selah. These are tears of release. I have confessed, he has forgiven, even the guilt of my sin is gone. You and I who have known that release understand the tears. Sometimes it's the only emotion that fits, having been so racked and broken by the guilt and shame of our acts or thoughts. Selah. The fourth stanza is a prayer of protection. Interestingly, it is as if God takes up a stylus. Even the pronouns change. I will instruct you and teach you in the way which you shall go. I will guide you with my eye upon you. This is the Lord speaking. So this would be the prayer of protection. For this shall everyone who is godly pray unto you in a time when you may be found. Surely in the floods of great waters, they will not come nigh to you. What are the waters? What is the flood? What could come nigh to the praying person? We'll come to that. Selah. Tears of gratitude. And finally, this climactic 5th stanza, 8 through 11, the wisdom of instruction. Here's the insight. This will assist you in living your life, whether in my century, the 1st century, or the 21st century. This is a psalm to guide your life by. Let's observe the first stanza. I almost find myself saying, let's sing it together. But we have no melody. We only have lyrics. But remember, it is a psalm to move us, to touch us. How blessed. It begins like a beatitude, remember? Blessed are the poor in spirit. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness. It reads like a beatitude. Every time blessed appears in the Hebrew text, it's in the plural. How blessed many times over. What multiple blessings come. How often are the benefits that come to the one who? Look, whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. How blessed is the one whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, in whose spirit there is no deceit. Remember David's writing. He's lived all of these. He's lived out transgression. The word means willful disobedience, rebellion. That's what happened on the roof when he looked down on the backyard and saw Bathsheba. He knew she was another man's wife. He ignored the fact that she was another man's wife, even asking a servant, "Who is this? Is this not Bathsheba, the wife of Uriah?" You may not remember, but Uriah is numbered among the 30 great warriors David names as he comes toward the end of his life. These are men who stood for me as few others. Uriah is one of his heroes. Can you believe it? You can when you realize that rebellion ignores all friendships. That's why some husbands take other men's wives. That's why some wives steal other women's husbands. It's rebellion. It's called here transgression. How blessed many times over is the one whose transgression is forgiven. Mine. Mine. David would say, these are my transgressions that have been forgiven. I'm blessed many times over, not because I'm the king of Israel, not because I have a wife and family, not because I am rich and famous. I am blessed many times over because I serve and worship a God who hasn't killed me. He has forgiven me. And look next, whose sin is covered. The word means missing the mark, missing the aim. The mark of David's life was to lead in a godly way. When he brought in Bathsheba, he departed from that mark. He left the target. He misaimed the arrows of his life. He sinned. He doesn't call it a misunderstanding. He doesn't say it was a mental mistake. It wasn't just all of a sudden a momentary insanity. It was sin. Calls it that. I love it. Whose sin is covered, whose iniquity has not been credited to his account. Don't you love that? How blessed is the man many times over whom the Lord does not credit to his account, a continuation of the reminder of his iniquity that's gone. The word means twisted perversity, which is exactly David's act. Nothing less than that. And finally, in whose spirit there is no deceit. Here it could quite likely mean self-deception, which is what you live with when you go on with unconfessed sin in your life. You fake it. He looked like the leader he had been. He wasn't. He acted like he was really the king they could respect. He wasn't. He lived under self-deception. How blessed many times over is the one in whose spirit there is no longer any deception. He could live his life as an open book. How great is that?
Restoration begins with calling our mistakes what they truly are, a sin. This is all part of giving thanks for God's forgiveness. That's the title that Chuck Swindoll has chosen for his sermon today, based on our study in Psalm 32. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. As a nonprofit ministry, Chuck's teaching is made possible through voluntary donations from people just like you. In a real sense, you're the one who's making it possible to reach people like this woman in North Carolina who shared her story with us. She said, "Chuck, I grew up in a church that was very legalistic. I never felt that I was good enough to even be there. So for 20 plus years, I refused to go to church. One day, I was searching for something to listen to on the radio, and this man with a southern accent was on. Well, it was you, and Insight for Living has been a companion ever since. Thank you for bringing God's awesome word to us each day. I will be in heaven when I die because of this ministry." Well, such an encouraging note. And you know, when you give to Insight for Living, you are playing a significant role in reaching listeners just like this one. You can join this effort today by giving us a call. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888. Or you can give online at insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us next time when Chuck Swindoll continues with a message called Guilt, Grace, and Gratitude, right here on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, Giving Thanks for God's Forgiveness, was copyrighted in 2011 and 2012, and the sound recording was copyrighted in 2012 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.